This is a Carlisle ValueCast, brought to you by the Carlisle Group. ValueCast brings you insights from our One Carlisle Network, providing analysis, data, and observations to help you navigate the global economy and top-of-mind issues and news. The Carlisle Group. Invest wisely. Create value.
The following is an edited replay of a recent live webcast to our limited partners regarding current trends and impacts in the energy sector.
Good morning from Washington, D.C. My name is Dan Daniello, chairman and co-founder of the Carlisle Group. Our goal is to provide you with high-level thinking on the risks and opportunities we're seeing across the investment landscape. And today, we're providing our thoughts across our One Carlisle platform on the recent decline in energy prices and how that might impact the global economy. I'm joined today by Tony Weber, Managing Director and Chief Operating Officer of Natural Gas Partners, our cornerstone partner in natural resource investing based in Dallas. Bob McGuire, Managing Director with Carlisle International Energy Partners. Bob is based in London. Brian Bernasek, Managing Director in our U.S. buyout business based here in Washington, and he's focused on the industrial and transportation sectors. And Jason Thomas, Managing Director and Carlisle's Corporate Director of Research, also based in Washington. Together, Tony, Bob, Brian, and Jason will provide a review of the current trends in energy and specifically the impacts that falling energy prices are having and will have on their respective areas of expertise. So with that, I'll turn it over to Tony Weber for his perspectives on the North American's effects. Tony?
Thank you, Dan. I appreciate the opportunity to be with you all today. As a refresh or a reminder on Natural Gas Partners, we are focused on the United States and Canada, and for the most part, invest across three sectors, the primary one being the upstream sector. About 80 or so percent of our capital is directed toward opportunities to build oil and gas companies. The balance is split among midstream entities and oilfield services companies that do business for those upstream producers. I say that because all three of those sectors can and likely will be affected by what happens to commodity prices. They have, over the last several weeks, all experienced a drop in the price of crude oil, and I suppose that's the primary topic that most people have on their mind these days when they think about energy investing. The first comment I would make on that front is akin to my favorite football team, the Green Bay Packers, and their quarterback when they lost the first two ball games of the beginning of this season when he said, look, folks, just relax. Because at the end of the analysis, if I ask you, how does this current year's 28% decline in crude oil price stack up to the largest decline in prices over, let's say, the last 8 to 10 years, I think most people would assume this feels worse, that it is one of the worst declines in, say, the last 8 to 10 years. And in fact, during that time frame, this 28% decline lands right in the middle. We've had declines upwards of 80% in the last 10 years, and it is not something that is dramatically unexpected by Natural Gas Partners. Our long-term perspective has always been that we expect crude oil prices to be range-bound between about $80 on the downside and $100 on the upside. Most of our industry looks at commodity prices, forecast those for budgeting purposes as they look to drill wells, make acquisitions, go through their A&D activity, and the consensus drops somewhere in that range between $80 and $100. We're currently below that. Obviously, oil price declines are not rare. They do have an impact on the absolute economics for those producers, but it does not affect all plays and all companies in the same way. When you think of the most prolific basins that produce oil, for instance, in our country, those being the Permian Basin in West Texas, the Bakken play up at the northern tier of North Dakota and even into Canada, the Eagle Ford play down in South Texas, et cetera. There are various qualities of those land positions, tier 1, 2, and 3 acreage, as the industry likes to refer to them. What we see happening today is a consolidation back to the center. Producers are moving back to the core of the core position, where we will see rigs lay down, where we will see activity slow down, is in those concentric circles that are furthest away from the center. So prices will change the economics on those drill wells to a point where they're uneconomic. It will also affect the metrics that you see in the A&D activity. Picking up land positions that perhaps 6 months ago or a year ago were a couple of $1,000s an acre, that may very well drop to a couple $100s per acre, or in fact they're deemed uneconomic for the foreseeable future and they simply aren't assets that are in vogue for any potential buyer. The other effects that are obvious as we prosecute our plan are the effects of the balance sheet. If a company has greater than, say, 2.5 times leverage, prices are down, revenues and profits are therefore down, you can start to see the effect of that on these companies. Interest rates could fluctuate and create additional problems for those companies. Today, we don't see a dramatic amount of stress in the system as prices are in the high 70s, but I think the consensus pick on our floor and the work that our folks do here internally says that if we see a sustained drop below $80, and what by that I mean probably in the neighborhood of 6 to 9 months, you'll begin to see more cracks in some of the balance sheets of the companies that we tend to be buyers from. In that case, if they cannot replenish that balance sheet with new equity, which by the way could be an opportunity for a firm like ours, they may very well begin to monetize some of those assets to pay down debt and repair themselves. As we look at it, I would encourage everybody to appreciate the fact that volatility tends to be our friend. Rig activity could slow. You may see a cut in 2015 CapEx for the operators in our industry. We project it to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 150 to 160 of the horizontal rigs currently drilling oil that are at risk. By that, I mean they are currently drilling in acreage positions that are not close enough to the core, such that the economics associated with that drilling are likely to fall below a required rate of return for that capital. Financial leverage, again, being a key consideration that drives that rig activity. And we expect that A&D activity will slow for a period of time because as prices are either below that 80 on the downside or above the 100 on the upside, the A&D market tends to freeze up a little bit.
Thank you very much, Tony. Now let's go to Bob McGuire for the international energy backdrop. Bob?
Thank you, Dan. I'm going to take it, as you'll see, from a slightly different vantage point. First, when we look at energy investment, in a sense, the near-term oil price really, you know, is not irrelevant, but irrelevant in terms of long-term investment decisions. Now, what do I mean by that? If you look at a project like the North Slope of Alaska, you know, when people started looking at that in the mid-60s, they were thinking of beginning production in 1978, 1980, but with the expectation that production would be continuing through 2078, 2080. So that was literally a 100-year investment decision. And clearly, in that context, in the context of a large upstream development project, the near-term oil price really is not important to the overall project economics. It's a much more strategic decision than short-term decision, if you will. Now, that is not to say that the budgetary impact isn't significant. I mean, people live by cash flow in this year and the next 2 or 3 years out, so that will affect budgeting decisions. But will it make affect significant strategic decisions in terms of capital allocation? We don't think so, at least in the upstream. I mean, we make the same point by simply noting that if you look at the forward curve today, yes, the front-end prices are much lower than they have been. But if you go out to 2018, 2019, in fact, the medium-term price is actually slightly higher than it has been. Now, you know, probably not significantly higher to make a difference, but you could say it's exactly the same price, which is as it has been. So in that sense, everything is relatively front-end loaded. The back-end is the same as it always has been. What matters, of course, is the shape of the curve. I mean, as we look at what affects our investments and our investment decisions, the shape of the curve is much more important than the absolute level of the curve. What is, I think, much more important than the absolute level of the prices and the curve, in fact, is the more structural differentials, because those are permanent. And an interesting point to note about Europe today, particularly, is that in many senses we have been living here with low prices for a long time, since 2009, 2008, when U.S. tight oil and U.S. shale gas began to be produced. And it's that delta between the cost of oil and gas in the U.S. versus Europe that has had a very, very profound effect on the industrial landscape here. You only need to look to Germany and the chemicals industry. BASF, you know, has been the giant of German industrial power. It is now non-competitive with the U.S. So you see a lot of jobs now leaving Germany specifically because of what's happening in the market. Similarly for us, in the refining business, the tight oil, the surplus of tight oil in the United States, and the fact that it has been trapped, crude oil has been trapped in the U.S. because there's the ban on exports, it pays for U.S. refiners with a relative advantage versus a Brent price to export refined product to Europe and to the rest of the world. And that has been hurting us in our refining business or refining industry generally in Europe. That's starting to turn around now, partly because there's more oil finding its way out of the U.S. in the form of condensate. But it is unaffected in a sense by the absolute price. It's simply that delta between what a European refiner will have to supply itself with versus a U.S. refiner. So it's not quite as simple as simply looking at the absolute level of prices. As I say, that has near-term impact in budgets. But in terms of the strategic investing decisions that we or the industry is having to make, it's a slightly more complicated and longer-term proposition, partly affected by prices, but equally not affected by near-term prices.
Thank you very much, Bob. Okay, now we're going to go forward with Brian Bernasek. He will be discussing the impact of lower energy prices on industrials who both supply the industry and are energy-intensive users of the commodity. Brian?
Thanks, Dan. And as Dan mentioned at the beginning of the call, I spend my time in the U.S. buyout fund, and some of my thoughts here are based on what we see in the existing portfolio and what we expect to see in the investment world going forward in terms of new opportunities. But energy has been a big driver in the industrial markets for the last several years. It's been a growth engine for a number of the industrial players as an end market. It's where a number of the large manufacturers of equipment have wanted to be. They've sought an opportunity to increase exposure, and you see it in the valuations of oil-based businesses, oil and gas-based businesses as an end market. So in many ways, in the U.S. certainly, it has been the driver in the absence of a construction recovery. So it's been an important aspect for us and a place where we spent time. We've thought about trying to find more opportunities to get exposure in the market through our existing portfolio and in terms of new deals. I certainly share Tony's view that it's early and it's hard to see what the impact will be, how long these prices will stay where they are, and what the implications of that are. There are, though, I think, as you look forward, clearly some winners and losers if the prices stay in this range on the oil side. From a winner's perspective, we certainly see that the auto industry is likely to do better. We can see the OEMs perform better with more SUV sales. It's a very valuable product for the auto manufacturers. SAR has been quite strong across the globe, but this would be a good positive impact for the OEs and in turn for their suppliers. You also see an increase in miles driven, which you'd anticipate, and that'll help aftermarket businesses as well. You know, we also see places where we'll see an improvement in the operating performance on businesses that are driven by fuel costs. You know, the trucking, airlines businesses, some of the shipping plays may be impacted as well with some lower costs to their equations. And I think if you look pretty clearly on the losers, and these have been mentioned with Tony and Bob both, and it'll be time will tell, but we certainly anticipate on the upstream side of oil and gas equipment and oil services that there will be some softness. We're not sure on the midstream and downstream. Folks are a lot more optimistic there as we step forward at prices here, but I think everybody's eyes are wide open in that segment. And, you know, even on the particular avenues on the transportation side that I mentioned with the trucking and airlines doing well, that has implications for rail, that they'll be less competitive versus the trucking and airline side of shipping. So there are implications all around the board. And then finally, I'd note the one place that we're just not sure until you look into a micro basis is how when oil is a raw material, how that will play in particular businesses. And it's just a question of pass-through. If we've got a petrochem business that is able to pass on changes one direction or another, or if we've got an oil-based plastics business, that's a place where we'll see in time and our ability to pass through how that plays. And you really have to look at it on a micro basis. So I hope, Dan, that gives an introduction to some thoughts around how it impacts us from a bio perspective.
Okay, thank you, Brian. Now we'll go to Jason Thomas, our Director of Research, who will review the potential impacts on the broader economy, including those on the consumer. Jason?
Thank you. I'd like to briefly touch on four topics in the next few minutes. First, the impact on the U.S. household sector. Second, the likely impact on U.S. fixed investment in the energy sector. Third, the impact on inflation and the monetary policy outlook for the U.S. And then fourth, just a couple of comments about the U.S. dollar and some of the global implications. So first, talking to the U.S. household sector, this is a positive terms of trade shock for the U.S. household sector. It's basically a large effective tax cut. As of right now, if you look at the average price of gasoline relative to the same week 1 year ago, you have a reduction of about 35 cents per gallon. Based on the 135 billion gallons of gasoline consumed annually, that translates to a $50 billion effective tax cut for the household sector. That's equal to about 1.1% of U.S. retail sales. The price of gasoline does not yet reflect the full decline in the price of a barrel of oil. There's a bit of a lag there. If the full decline in the price of oil is translated to gasoline prices, you have average gasoline prices in the U.S. falling to about $2.75 per gallon. That's down from an average of $3.44 for the prior 12 months. And that would equal a savings of $93 billion, so a $93 billion effective tax cut, and that's equal to almost 2% of U.S. retail sales. Now, the question, of course, is how much of this effective tax cut will households spend? How much will they save? I think the smart money is on spending quite a large share of it. If you look historically, one of the best predictors of the acceleration or deceleration in household consumption spending trends is looking at average wages per hour relative to the average price of gasoline. Basically, how many gallons of gasoline can a worker buy for a 1 hour of labor? And right now, the change in that ratio suggests that the consumption expenditures in the U.S. could accelerate by about 70 basis points if the full decline in the price of oil is passed through to gasoline. So that seems about right, as the savings that we're talking about is equal to about 0.9% of wages. So the average worker in the U.S. earns $850 a week. This is about an $8 decline in the cost of filling up a tank. So, you know, it looks like about 70% of the effective tax cut will be spent. That would increase U.S. GDP, holding all else constant, by about 30 to 50 basis points, a one-time effect. So basically, if you think the economy is growing at about 2.5% right now, which is roughly where we see it, holding all else constant, you'd expect the economy to accelerate to, you know, 2.8 to 3%. Of course, there is amazingly a flip side, which is the negative impact on U.S. fixed investment. I say amazingly because, you know, if you would have said 15 years ago, for example, a decline in the price of oil, price of gasoline, was really nothing but a pure windfall for the United States. Today, given the increase in unconventional oil and gas and the associated investment, it's a different story. A few statistics I think that are interesting. First, over the last 5 years, energy and energy-related investment in the United States has accounted for 70% of net industrial investment in the United States. That's investment after accounting for depreciation. So really an enormous share of our net industrial investment in the United States. Secondly, in the 1990s, investment in mining, basically drilling wells, shafts, exploration, was equal to 50% of the investment in manufacturing plant. Over the last 5 years, the investment in mining structures has been three times as large as investment in manufacturing plants. So this has become a large and growing share of our economy. Right now, in 2014, energy-related fixed investment is about $230 billion U.S. dollars. That's about $150 billion in mining, exploration, again, the construction of shafts and wells, and then an additional $75 billion and related industrial equipment. How large is the impact on fixed investment going to be from a price decline? It's very difficult to say because business managers do not make decisions based on the spot price of commodities, or at least they shouldn't. I don't suspect people that do are stay in business very long. And as was mentioned earlier, the longer-term price revealed by the futures curve has not really shifted that much. So it's very difficult to know how large of a decline in fixed investment is likely to come from the 26% decline in the spot price of oil. But I think it's very likely to expect a deceleration close to stasis. So right now, if we're going at about an 8% annual rate in related fixed investment, if that slows to essentially zero, we would have a subtraction of GDP of about 20 basis points. So overall, I think that, you know, it looks like the net from the consumer of a, you know, a gain of 30 to 55 basis points and about a 20 basis point contraction. On net, I think we're looking at an acceleration in U.S. GDP from the decline in the price of oil of between 0.1 and 0.3%. Gasoline accounts for 5% of the U.S. CPI basket. So that's the gasoline price declines are taking off about 15 basis points per month of U.S. inflation. At current trends, if the price decline continues to get passed through to gasoline, it looks like the inflation in the U.S. is going to decelerate to about a 1.2% annual rate. This is a one-time effect. You know, unless people think the price of oil is going to continue to decline, it's basically going to pull down the inflation rate once, and then, you know, the effect is going to disappear. But, you know, there's a great deal of sensitivity among policymakers at the Federal Open Market Committee about the risk of deflation, continued concern about ensuring that inflation expectations are well anchored. And I really feel there's an asymmetry here so that if oil prices were rising, the Fed officials would say this is a one-time effect, they're not concerned. But the fact that they're declining, as reflected in the minutes released yesterday, is actually a source of concern. And I think that on the margin, policy is likely to be a bit more accommodative, a bit easier than it would otherwise. So while I still expect the Fed to raise interest rates in by June of 2015 for the first time, taking the Fed funds rate up from an effective rate of 0 to 25 basis points to a target range of 25 to 50 basis points, I think that any shock or any sign that the economy has stumbled is likely to lead to perhaps a delay of one quarter in that outlook, again, because the Fed feels they have much more latitude given an inflation rate that's likely to end is likely to enter 2015 at about a 1.2% annual rate. Finally, just with regard to the international situation, I think that a large share of the decline in the price of oil right now is attributable to the deceleration in global growth, especially growth in the emerging markets. If you look at the decline in global GDP growth from right now relative to forecasts of April of 2013, you find that emerging markets account for about 75% of the deceleration. And that is, they're also among the most energy intensive consumers. So their decline in growth is going to have a larger impact on demand for commodities generally and fuel commodities in particular. So I think that as you, I think it's reasonable to expect that the current decline in the price is likely to rebound once these economies return to trend growth rates of closer to 5 or 5.5%. Right now, through the first 10 months of 2014, it looks as though emerging market economies have grown by only about 4.3%, so over a percentage point below their trend growth rates. So with that, I'd be happy to respond to any other questions about the macro environment, but Dan, thank you very much for the opportunity.
Okay. But to put a fine point on it, will the majors, so for example, be abandoning some of their wells earlier in the decline cycle because of this, and as a result, provide more opportunities for private equity generally?
I think that's right. The notion of monetizing marginal assets and focusing on higher impact assets is the way those folks think every day. So if you're a major oil company and you're operating in the deep Gulf of Mexico, where on balance the risk may be higher, but the overall cost to deliver those barrels, find them, complete those wells, and deliver those barrels to the market is very economic, or in West Africa or Southeast Asia, you're going to concentrate your efforts, your people, your human capital there. The way you pay for it, again, is to monetize assets, use the capital markets. The capital markets, the banks, the high-yield debt providers are going to be constrained a little bit in a down cycle in commodity prices. So we would expect, as things get down to this point in the let's say, $70 to $80 per barrel range, eventually the M&A market will kick back into gear, and perhaps in the first half of 2015, you will see a pickup in transactions, and that would give us opportunities to go back in and buy some of those mature assets, particularly here in the United States and Canada, that just don't have that big impact for them but can have a terrific impact for a small cap E&P company.
Okay. For Tony and for Bob, what do you suspect? You know, we've talked a lot about the potential now with the change in the energy outlook of the United States, the potential for exporting energy, natural gas, and some have even said at some point oil. But specifically, what do you believe the near-term impact is going to be on sort of the whole strategy of building LNG export terminals and, in fact, exporting LNG? Tony or Bob, either one of you can start there.
This is Tony. For our purposes, as our petroleum economist, Dr. Alhaji, works through his numbers, our expectation is that in probably the 2017-18 year timeframe is when we would expect the export of LNG to have a significant effect on the overall gas markets in this country. And we can see probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 4 BCF a day, somewhere in that range in our estimates. It's therefore a couple years off. Between now and then, you'll begin to see some projects take shape. You'll see opportunities to invest, perhaps, and the relief valve, if you will, on what could be an oversupply of gas during that period of time. So our expectation is it's in the medium term, I would suppose, but not anything in the next year or two that would affect the way we think about natural gas prices and the way we invest your capital.
Bob?
Yeah. And then, Dan, it goes to a point I think that you made before, which is what is the European response, particularly to Russia and the dependence on Russia? Well, of course, it's going to be, as I said, to build out access to different sources of energy. And in that sense, LNG regas facilities, I think, are going to be very important. We've seen in one of our investments, which is an asset that's located in a port facility. It's a discontinued or mothballed refinery being converted to liquid storage. That's an ideal site to build an LNG regas facility because it has deep water access. And certainly we have had discussions with some of the bigger utilities in Europe on exactly that topic and for exactly that reason, that it's a source for just like diversification of supply sources. So we expect, I would think, to see more of that. And that just makes sense in any event. And I think the economics will support that. As I said, I gave the example of the regas vessel. It will support it because it will force Russia to, I believe, reduce prices.
I'd like to conclude by thanking Tony, Bob, Brian, and Jason for their insights. I'd also like to thank those on the call for joining us. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. For more information, go to our website at www.carlyle.com. This has been a Carlyle ValueCast podcast.